Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome once again to a new episode of Absolute Truth, Absolutely. And this is exactly what we try to do on these podcast episodes. To share the truth, nothing but the truth, the whole truth. And God is helping us to do just that. I want to thank you for your faithful downloading of these podcasts. And I know that you're sharing them with your friends, with your family members, so they too can also know the truth of the matter in a world full of uncertainty. This is your host, Gio. I received a phone call earlier today at the office from a very interested party, a listener of our church's radio program, and he brought about some very interesting points that I thought I would share with you on this podcast because I think that they are expedient to touch on, especially in our day and age, especially in the era that we are living in and in the culture that we must walk in and we must try to involve ourselves in. We have this mentality that is pervasive among many youths and even many adults that says something to this effect. They say, I'm never at fault, I'm never wrong, and if you dare call me out on some supposed infraction, I will make sure to make your life a living hell. Now, we have to, in some way, shape, or form, we must dissect this further to see where this ideology comes from. Because the truth of the matter is that human beings are not perfect. We are an imperfect people. But yet this says that is that no such as myself or yourself ever infringing upon the rights of others or even disobeying God. Because we're perfect. We're demigods. I mean, we're almost there. But the truth is, we human beings are imperfect and we will infringe upon the rights of others. And we will disrespect other people, including our parents, and we will do things that are out of what is ethical, out of what is moral. It is immoral. And we need to ask ourselves what we do in those instances. Now, this caller, he said he approached the wife of the pastor whose church he attends. And he quoted to me Ephesians 4:29, which verse there it says, not to contaminate our mouths with words that, and I'll paraphrase, that typically secularists like to use. Even in another part of it says, the bad conversation, they will corrupt good customs. And it's important for us to, of course, this is part of the overall scheme for the Christian, if you will, the overall behavior, comportment of the Christian, because we have to showcase that we are different, that we are a people called to be separate, not isolationists, but rather separate. To live the fray, to live above the influence of the secular world. This is what Jesus taught, and this is what the apostles taught in the rest of the New Testament, including Paul, Peter, James, etc., John also. So when I find this, that he's telling me this, he says, well, I went up to the pastor because he was speaking as a secularist. He was speaking as a sinner. The words that were coming out of his mouth were sinful. They weren't technically cuss words, if you will, but it would be the way that a typical sinner would express himself in a very vulgar manner. And he said that he approached the wife of the pastor and that she said to him, you must learn to be merciful. You need to learn how to forgive. Notice that she was admitting guilt. Notice that she was admitting that the pastor was wrong in speaking the way that he speaks. But nevertheless, she demanded mercy from the man who was offended. She demanded that the man who had been listening to all of this discourse filled with vulgarities and similar words that are employed by sinners, that this man who was offended by this showcase, forgive, because it is the right thing to do. And I'd like to dissect this mindset because it is pervasive in our I don't know if you've ever encountered another thing or not. Pretty sure you have. But usually when you have relation people or even you just meet people on the street and maybe somebody bumps you or somebody cuts you off in traffic and you complain about it because they are in the wrong, they get mad at you. They say, what's wrong with you? Why are you getting mad at me? You have no reason to get mad at me and now I'm going to throw the kitchen sink at you. Because you have no right to get mad at me. Yes, I know that I infringed upon your rights. I know that I did something that I wasn't supposed to do. But guess what? You have no right to call me out on it. And now that you've called me out on it, you've committed an error. You've committed an injustice, an unrighteousness. and you need to ask forgiveness from me. This thought process is so wrong on so many levels. Because first and foremost, he that infringes upon the rights of another, he that commits infraction, has no right to mercy from he that it is in their sole possession to distribute it, to promulgate it, to disseminate it. When you have been, let's put it another way, when your rights have been trampled upon, when somebody has offended you, and we're talking about true offense here, we're not talking about this superficial offense that gets constantly disseminated in our PC, politically correct, calling about because there is the absolute right offended over that is wrong, morally, that it is immoral. We're talking about that sort of offense. It is in the persons whose rights have been infringed, it is only in their power to give out, to distribute mercy and forgiveness. You cannot demand that if you have committed the crime. If you are the infractor of the law, it is as if you are an evildoer and you present yourself before a judge and you say, "Judgy, I know that I have killed people. I know that I have infringed on the rights of others. I know that I have broken the law. But under the obligation to let me have mercy on my soul. And I'll tell you why. Because it is not my fault. My mother and father, my circumstances were dire when I was younger. And this is who I am. These circumstances have made me who I am." You're looking to justify that erroneous behavior. You're looking for a pretext in order to excuse your ill behavior instead of correcting it, instead of mending it. And that is sinful. You're trying to excuse away evil doing. The judge is going to throw the hammer at you, at your head. And after he does, and he whacks you with it, he's going to say, "I'm going to give you an elongated prison term because you actually think that you can demand mercy when you are the transgressor of the law." But guess what? This is the mentality day and day. This is what people are thinking like nowadays. This is the ideology that people carry in their hearts nowadays. They say, "No, I did not commit the error. I didn't do wrong. And if I did, you have to forgive me because doesn't it say somewhere in the Bible that you have to forgive 70 times 7? Something or other? Doesn't it say somewhere that we have to forgive our enemies?" And mind you, they use these, they totally decontextualize these verses. That's first and foremost. And they don't even know what the Bible says so as for them to quote it, okay? That's number one. Number two, this erroneous thought process showcases a much deeper problem in our society. And it is this: the adoption of a mentality that says, "I am always the victim. I am always the victim. I'm never at fault. I always blame somebody else. I never take responsibility for my actions. And therefore, somebody else has to pay for my crime." This is so evil on so many levels. This is so wrong. But yet people believe it. And many young people have adopted this thought process, and they actually think that they can carry on in life behaving this way. How egregious is this? How evil is this thought process? And let me explain this furthermore. When a person is offended, when it has been proven that an individual has had wrongdoing against them, only that person can provide forgiveness. It is not in the power of man to demand it. But guess what? It is part of the train of thought that makes many people allude to the Catholic Church and other religious entities that are not biblical. Why, Gio? Because they think that they can reinterpret, reestablish, and excommunicate, if you will, God's laws, the ones that he establishes because he is the creator of the universe. And therefore, since heaven is his, remember, he's the one that establishes the parameters, the guidelines as to how we get in there. But human beings say, no. Jesus Christ only is the only way to the Father. No, hell no, we won't go. That's not the way it works. We get in because of our good behavior. And let me ask you a question. What in the heck is good behavior? Because good behavior for one person might be indefinite another spouse. In other words, that terminology, good behavior, is subjective, extremely subjective. Because now you're talking about an individual's point of view. And most individuals disagree massively as it pertains to what is good behavior. Because to some people, they think good behavior is, I stay with my wife and kids. But guess what? I don't mind if I cheat on my taxes. I don't mind if I defraud a business action. Some people might say, being a person is making treat everybody right, including the person that you are committing adultery with. You see what I'm saying? It's hypocritical. And it's inconsistent. It's relativism. It's worst because relativism really has no best point. It's at its worst. All of a sudden, we've tossed out absolutism. We've tossed out the truth. We've said it's inconvenient. We have to toss it out. So therefore, we can't include it in the argument. This thought process that says, you have committed wrong against me. You have done what is wrong. And then the person comes back and says, no, you're offending me. I mean, this is the same thought process that leads parents to raise hell when their kids are in the wrong, when they are in error, and yet the parents do everything they can to defend their child, if you can even call that a defense, to raise hell about the person that is calling out their children for misbehaving. It's the same thought process. It's victim mentality that many people in our country are espousing, and then they also disseminate by saying, I'm the victim, therefore I need help. I can't get up. I've fallen and I can't get up. Even though they have two perfectly good legs, two perfectly good arms, a perfectly shaped brain, they can do for themselves what many other people cannot because maybe they're disabled. As a matter of fact, I think I'm offending disabled people because there's a bunch of people out there that are missing limbs. And guess what? They're not looking for entitlements. They're out there. They're doers. They're go-getters. And some of these guys that are perfectly in shape, perfectly in health, they don't do anything. They don't get off their laurels. They feel like, huh, somebody's got it out against me. The man. And therefore, I got to do everything I can in order to get ahead. Even if it means that I have to steal and lie and cheat. That's fine. Because my circumstances don't allow me to get up from here. All of these mentalities, they sprout out from the same ideology. The same idea that will admit. And we have to be very careful with this. Because many, many, many of our peers have adopted this very thought process. And I encourage you, if you're a young person, an adult, wherever you find yourself, look at the Bible and look at what the Bible has to say about that very mentality. About this mentality that says, no, I've committed, I know I've done wrong, but nevertheless, you still have to forgive, which is wrong. This mentality that says, I've fallen and I can't get up, I need somebody to help me, and guess what, I'm never ever going to work because I can't have enough strength to get up. Well, that offends the people. The Bible has plenty to say of that. I'll give you an example. When we go 1 Corinthians number 6, we find the church. They had issues. These guys were taking their court to the secular courts to resolve issues that should have been resolved within the church. And you see that Paul says, what is going on here? Why are you going to the secular authorities when you can resolve this issue within the church? What, is there not a wise man among you? Paul says, and I say this to your shame. But notice what he says. He says, we're going to judge angels. We're going to judge the world. Are you telling me that you can't judge these simple matters among yourselves? But in verse 7, he continues, now therefore it is already an utter failure for you that you go to the law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourselves be cheated? No, you yourselves do wrong and cheat, and you do these things to your brethren. Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? In other words, notice how these people, there was a group there, half of the party who was not willing to admit guilt. It was happening from the very beginning. Yet instead of resolving these issues among themselves and saying, you know what, let me be repentant, and the other person saying, let me just forgive so that we can reestablish that broken communication, that broken relationship. And in the same way, it works with God, ladies and gentlemen, the same way. When we offend God, instead of going to Him to ask forgiveness, we continue in our pride to say, I have done nothing wrong. And now that relationship with God it's paused. Because you've offended God and you're not willing to admit guilt. Think about it. Many Christians have adopted this thought process. And it's so wrong on so many levels. I mean, I can't say that enough. But let me tell you something. More than anything else, I encourage you to change this mindset if it is one that you have established in your heart. Change it. Make sure, be assured that when you are wrong, you admit wrongdoing. And that it is not a shot to your pride if you admit wrongdoing, but rather it is beneficial. Because it showcases the areas in your life where you need correction, where you need mending. Once you do that, to be for your own advantage. Why? First and foremost, you will be a better human being for it. Number two, I'd be number one, but just in the sequence of it, mind. You will have a better relationship with God, uninhibited relationship with God. And number three, it will be much easier for you to forgive. Yes, there might be people who might demand forgiveness from you, even though it is not in their power to demand it. But nevertheless, it would be a lot easier for you to forgive. Why? Because you understand that we have received these gifts from God by grace. Salvation is a gift given by grace. Everything we own, everything we possess, everything that we manage, everything that we are stewards of, God owns it. It's His. But guess what? He has given us the responsibility to be able to handle these things, to take care of them, including our relationships, money, our relationship with Him. We are stewards of these things, and we have to ensure that we take care of them to the fullest potential. And when you understand that you are saved by grace, then that leads you to have such an appreciation for Jesus and for God that you say, I don't ever want that relationship to be tarnished in any way, shape, or form, or damaged for a season. Even if it's just for a season, I don't want that damaged. And therefore, let me ask forgiveness from the Almighty. And you understand back, if you will, how great God's grace is and how He has bestowed forgiveness and given you, He sanctified you, justified you. And therefore, it would be easier for you now to forgive your neighbor, to forgive your fellow man, even though they might think that they're entitled to it. Now you're just forgiving for the sake of Christ, because God has forgiven you, because the Father has bestowed forgiveness upon you. You do it because you give by grace what you have received by grace. It's very understandable by the Bible. And now this victim mentality disappears. Now I'm be a responsible person. God has given me these gifts, He's given me these talents, He's given me the ability, He's given me these resources. Let me use them to the maximum potential. And let me return back like that good and faithful servant who was given 5 talents and he returned with 10. He multiplied his master's interests and he showcased to God that he was a responsible steward. Let us do the same thing as it pertains to our relationships with God, with man, and with everything that God has given us responsibility over. Thank you for sharing this time with me, and I thank you for downloading these podcasts. I consider it a privilege to be able to share the truth of the Lord, the truth of Jesus Christ with you. Please do not keep this to yourself. Share this with your friends, with your family members, so that they too can know the truth in a world full of uncertainty. My name is Gio. You can email me at gio@lwim.org, gio@lwim.org. Visit my blog, uncompromisedtruth.wordpress.com, and the youth ministry's website, lwim.org. If you're in the vicinity, Miami vicinity, visit us. 3175 Southwest 25th Street in Miami, Florida. 3170 South 5th Street in Miami, Florida, 8 p.m. every single Friday night. Until the next occasion that we meet, I bid you farewell, and may the Lord shine his face upon you.